We talk a lot on this podcast about chess improvement, but when it comes to improving your hiring processes, Indeed is the platform you need. Indeed has over 350 million global monthly visitors, and it has a matching engine that helps you find quality work candidates fast. You can use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with your candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Years ago, when I was running a chess teaching business, I found it hard to find good help, and I had to go through a lot of back and forth to even screen potential candidates. Indeed allows you to do those things efficiently in one place. Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed for hiring, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of Perpetual Chess will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility if you go to Indeed.com/chess. Just go to Indeed.com/chess right now, and you'll be supporting our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast, Indeed.com/chess. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Hello, everyone. I'm Ben Johnson, and this is the Perpetual Chess Podcast. On Perpetual Chess, I have weekly conversations with the chess world's best players, promoters, and educators about their lives, careers, current projects, and best practices. For more information, go to perpetualchesspod.com. Hello, everyone. I am here with Danny Rentsch, the vice president of chess.com and an international master in his own right. Danny, thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Ben.
So you guys are so busy with so many amazing projects that there's a lot of things I want to talk about, but I thought that I would start by throwing it to you and ask, what is taking up the most of your time these days?
Well, taking up the most of our time has been the Pro Chess League. So that just came to an end, which is pretty exciting to have a little bit of a breather, but no rest for the weary. We're moving right into the Speed Chess Championship, which is going to start with all these qualifying events as of Tuesday, April 4th. So that's going to have pretty much an all hands on deck for the professional events kind of group of us that cover and organize and do all this stuff. So that's going to be pretty exciting, and you can't really ask for more than the names that we have committed to this thing. So it's going to be really the big thing going on at chess.com for the rest of the year.
Okay, yeah, and I saw the name. I mean, it was amazing. Magnus Carlsen, Wesley So, Caruana, MVL, etc. So when this starts tomorrow, will the big names be involved right away, or is there a qualifying phase?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's funny because the last title Tuesday we had in March, I was in a call recording Chess Center, and I think it was with Anna Rudolph or Alexandra Botez, and literally in the middle of the call, Wesley So pings me on Skype and he's like, hey, like, you know, can I play today? I'm like, yeah, of course. And so I'm, you know, holding his hand to make sure he gets in the event and thinking that's a big deal. Well, you know, Nakamura and MBL pretty much play every month. But Wesley jumps in, and then like within 5 seconds after that, Fabiano pings me, and then Magnus is like, hey, I want to play just randomly. So I don't know what came to them. But if you check, so last title Tuesday, we had all these guys just show up, which is just awesome. And of course, then we had like some sort of server issue, which is, I mean, it's like literally the bane of my existence. But so I don't know. Here's the rules. Any of them can play and show up. I mean, there's $1,500 in prizes per event just for, you know, kicks and giggles. But if they do win the event, they won't be qualifying to play themselves, clearly. So it'll just go to the next person. But there is no limitations on any of these top guys playing in the event, even if they're already in the main Speed Chess Championship.
Okay. It's funny to me that the way that they register is by pinging you, but I guess...
I don't even mean to say it like that, like where it sounds like a random name drop, but it was so irritating, actually, because I was telling Anna, I was like, these guys can't figure out how to get into the live server and play themselves. It's, you know, they all have to ask for permission. It's so funny. But anyway, you pretty much can't tell Magnus to go away.
Right.
When he says he wants to play in a tournament and that you're recording Chess Center. So It's a lot of fun, and I think that the more we do all these things and keep the money being pushed back into the professional community online, the more it becomes sort of a habit for them to play. I mean, think about it. These guys are already just hanging out in their pajamas studying chess all day anyway, right? I mean, what the bleep else do they have to do? They might as well go play a tournament and win a few hundred bucks. So
yeah, exactly. And, you know, maybe learn a few new opening ideas along the way.
Right. Yeah, who knows what they actually – I mean, Nakamura usually, you know, plays like I don't know. What am I allowed to say on this show? Is it normal
curse.
That in a podcast I feel like I'm allowed to have, like, no filter? I mean, am I allowed to curse on this show?
Yes, you are. Yes, you
I
are.
I am?
Yeah, go
oh,
for it.
Oh, my bleeping. That is – it's like the chains have been lifted. Wow.
This is not a Chess Kid podcast, just for the grown-ups, although I'm sure some teenagers listen, but they've heard it, they've heard it before.
Right. No, sometimes I've been told I have a bit of a potty mouth off the air.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Well, you do a good job keeping it under wraps for the most part.
Yeah.
So you guys are getting psyched up for that. But before we delve into that deeper, let's reflect a little bit on the Pro Chess League. So you guys ended it last week. I know that our mutual friend Greg Shahadi was really happy with the ratings. What was your perspective from your perch?
I mean, honestly, we are just, it was so amazing to see the response, the viewership that we had, the level of support. Clearly, when we launched this thing, we thought that, you know, Eric and I have the history, I'll try not to go into all that unless you want to, but the history of the league play on chess.com is a bit, you know, it's a bit messy. Just, you know, we had the U.S. Chess League on the site a few years ago, and honestly, we weren't really prepared on a tech level. We've been doing this massive sort of, you know, restructuring of our tech stacks and rebuilding the site. And we just weren't ready to do it. And it led to kind of a crappy experience, to be honest, for everybody involved. But it never changed our perspective, me and Eric, from the belief that, one, league play is the future of chess online. There's a huge stickiness factor, which in our business, we use this term sticky because it's something that keeps people coming back, right? The reason why Facebook owns all of our damn souls is because you can't go any freaking where else to figure out what's going on with people.
Right.
You know, and because it's sticky, like you try to get it off your fingers and it's like your kids put licorice on you. You know, and so we think that league play keeps people coming back because it's interesting and it establishes more of a connection, I think, from the casual fan, which is really our biggest market, and the professional player, to actually have a reason to root for them. Honestly, nobody gives a shit if Magnus goes and wins Tata Steel again for the whatever time.
Right.
But when they start seeing this like team experience, I think it makes people really, really excited and intrigued. And so Eric and I were like never not sold that we were going to do it again. And we started gearing up for this sort of league idea kind of like around this time last year, and Greg sort of reached out. He was in a transition period. The league was apparently no longer going to be on ICC. I don't really know all the details of it, but you know, we had a few calls later. We ended up deciding that that it was time to kind of make the marriage a little bit, you know, start the marriage off on a little bit of a better foot. You know, maybe it's good that you get together, you know, out of like mutual attraction, and then you realize there's more to life than just sexual attraction. You push the marriage away, then you come back, and now you're in a healthier place to actually have a long-lasting relationship, right?
Right.
So let's make a funny reference and say that's what happened with the U.S. Chess League. So we were able to kind of acquire them slash, you know, hire Greg at the same time and incorporate whoever wanted to be a part of the U.S. Chess League to join. We knew there would be some people not thrilled with the changes we wanted to make, but frankly, we have a lot of data and a lot of analytics that say as much as chess buffs like us love getting on there and see the sexiness of the St. Louis broadcast, I mean, I know the numbers and there's something called a bounce rate. And even the grandmasters, no matter what they tell you, the average stay time on those pages is like 2-3 minutes per person. And so those who let it sit in the background while they eat lunch all day, I mean, that's one thing. But for the most part, people just don't have the ability to watch a 6-hour broadcast no matter what they tell you. And so as sexy as it looks, it's not really pushing the needle. I mean, they have the funds to do it, so that's great. But it's not something that's operating in that way in what we're looking for. So we were sold that it needed to be rapid. It needed to be, you know, as in your face as possible. So we knew we needed to make these massive format changes. And here you go. Like but I think people loved it. I mean, even people that didn't like it at first, like I think overall, when you have Magnus Carlsen And, you know, Wesley So playing in the final, can I even say that it wasn't a success? I mean, we got so lucky. And Magnus, after this title Tuesday, I mean, he said, like, he loves the league. And he told me it was, like, so cool to see him care about a team environment, you know?
Yeah. Go on.
So I can get into all the numbers and data, but yeah, it was a huge success from that perspective. I think there's a number of things we need to do better. Obviously, there were some issues. I think there were some scheduling issues. There were some controversies that happened for those who followed it closely, and we're not shying away from that. We're just handling everything in the most professional and efficient way that we know how to do it. But I think other than working out some of those kinks, I'm super excited about the future of this.
Yeah, as am I. And speaking of the kinks, we might as well talk about at least the one elephant in discussing any online chess tournament. So you guys had a few issues with people cheating and using computers. What are you going to do going forward to try to curtail that as best you can?
Well, you know, it's a tough question from the perspective that we didn't not think that just because we put our name on it and put up 50 grand that everyone's going to say all of a sudden decide to play cleanly. I mean, like, obviously the opposite effect would happen, right? So we were aware that this would happen. And I think there was a, you know, without getting into all the specifics, we ended up closing, what was it, probably 6 or 7 titled accounts total throughout the league for fair play violations. And, you know, we stand by those. Then there were some other sort of gray areas where, you know, if you believe everything you read on social media, which, of course, most people should remember that usually social media doesn't have all the facts. But right. I'm not going to get into all that, but just say that it was what did we do and what are we going to do? I mean, we relied on our investment and the resources we have into some pretty advanced algorithms that bring together assessments of things that we are able to stand by it. And one way I explain it to a lot of serious chess players is we don't rely on subjective information that chess players normally think of. Like a subjective analysis of someone's skills to me would be like, oh, X player of X rating is just not capable of seeing X combination in X amount of time. It's just not possible. Well, no one really knows that. And X player of this level or it's the result that makes people think it was cheating because the X player can't upset this many people in a row. Well, that's not true either. So, you know, we've been able to build a system that is really rating and result blind and is able to kind of match up and assess things in a way that is really, really advanced. And I encourage everybody to check out, you know, the testimonials we've had, including with other top players in the world who just didn't want to put their name on it. You know, it would make sense if you think about it from our perspective. If we're investing hundreds of thousands of dollars giving back to the professional community in the Speed Chess Championship, the Pro Chess League, we better be confident that if we can't prevent cheating, I mean, we're not Minority Report here. I can't tell you the murder before it happens. Yeah. We can at least act in a way that is probably much more efficient than people think you can act. So we have to continue to rely on the investment we've made. And then as far as what we're going to do with the league moving forward, I think we're going to improve some things about the process, the communications that are made and to make sure that we don't get some issues that we ran into just out of lack of experience. I mean, it's the first year. We're doing the best we can. And we thought that we were providing the most information we could. Sometimes that just doesn't always make people happy. But we're probably going to do a little more monitoring, a little more, as technology gets better. I mean, I wish everybody just had Google Fiber. And if bandwidth and connectivity issues are not on the table, there's no reason why we can't have more experiences like we have in the Speed Chess Championship. I mean, honestly, what made last year's event between Carlsen and Nakamura so much fun? It wasn't me and Bobby Hess. I mean, as much as I love Robert, it was being able to see Nakamura and Carlsen on camera, right? There was this like
there was something about that.
Bible where Carlsen was like laughing at Hikaru after a blunder, right? I mean, it was like, when did we get to see these guys doing that? Honestly, like, obviously, I'm a little biased because this is where I work. This is my arena. But to me, that experience of seeing the players on camera and their emotions and their focus there is something that we don't even get in over the board tournaments, whether we're on site or we're using Aegon's ridiculous 360 point of view. Did I just say that? Yeah. I mean, I think it's so cool to see that. And I think that if it wasn't for internet, Ben, like, we would probably have everybody on webcam and privately have screen share going. In the end, even that is, you know, there are ways to cheat. There are very advanced ways to get information if someone is able to relay it to you, which is why in the end you have to rely on data that is about much more than just checking whether someone matches up with an engine. It's about, you know, a lot of investment we've made into resources that detect patterns and they've been done through millions and millions of games. One of the things that really was our inhibitor for years on chess.com, I can share this information now because we've come so far, but there was an actual conversation that took place between me and Eric and Jay, the two co-founders, where we literally were debating whether we were even going to give a shit about cheating because it was getting so overwhelming. And we were being held to ICC standards while getting Google and Yahoo Chess numbers. There were almost a million games being played a day, even a few years ago, and we were supposed to detect cheating at a level that was comparable to OTB events. And remember, the membership is free. So it's not like where if someone pays you and gives you their money, we found that their likelihood of cheating goes just way down, right? And so it was very, very difficult. But because of that, because of the investment we had to make when we decided there's just no way we can turn our back, we have to invest and find ways to stay ahead of this. I think now that has become our biggest strength, that our data is really rock solid and it's based on millions and millions of games. It's been able to tell us a lot. So I think that helps us be confident. You know, we're definitely not perfect. I would claim that we're doing more than people would ever think is possible. But we're, you know, we can't claim to be perfect, only that we're still willing to help the game grow online despite the risks.
Yeah, well, it sounds like it has your full attention.
Absolutely. In fact, it has more than my full attention. I freaking dream about this and it drives me crazy. It has my full anxiety. Yeah. I hate it.
It is shocking how many, you know, 7 people in the grand scheme, that's not that many, but it's just so shameless. You know, it's surprising.
Yeah, one of the players, I won't say who, one of the players was cheating while being proctored, while being on webcam.
Wow.
So, I mean, just to tell you why we rely on data, and it's why a lot of people, conversations I have been with so many of my friends and people who are, some of them have signed our NDA and taken our course that you see Nakamura and MVL, these guys gave us their testimonial, right? Some of them have signed it and seen it, and most of them haven't, but they always ask the same thing. How did he cheat? How did he cheat? But what I have to come back to is, remember, like, if you're guessing on the method to the madness, this is why criminals are always ahead of the police. This is why, unfortunately, they have to investigate the murder afterwards. Because you, like, the how is harder and harder to understand. I mean, what if I told you there are, you know, this is giving a plug. Those who already know this cheating exists, they'll find it. There are browser plugins that give instant engine eval without registering any sort of mouse or suspicious activity. So someone is not having to check another program or do this or that. Again, so that's why our methods are based on things that can't hide. They can hide for a certain amount of time, but they can't hide in the long run, no matter what someone's doing. And it's because the method is impossible to detect and because the method is changing. I mean, people want metal detectors and put their cell phone. Well, there's plastic earpieces that kids have been using to cheat on SATs for years, and now they're bringing it into, you know, the chess tournaments. And I don't know that anybody's doing that. That wasn't an accusation. I'm just saying that the method is harder and harder to detect or to comprehend. And so you have to be able to measure things that you can stand behind legally, you know, in a court and say, it's like this. The world record for I do CrossFit, right? The world record for some sort of like overhead, like, you know, snatch press is like 1300 pounds or something. And you walk in and some guy says, I just did 1600 pounds and the bar's on the ground and there's 1600 pounds on it. And you're like, no, you didn't. That's not possible. They're like, yeah, I did. I'm like, well, you know, you didn't. They're like, well, you can't prove that I didn't. And you're like, you're right. But like beyond probably like, and you say, can you do it again? Right. And they say no. So you can't prove that they're wrong, but you can, beyond reasonable doubt, have information that says this is not probable. It's not possible based on X, Y, and Z. And that is based on the measurement of performance in a way that can't hide. Whereas the method is just, it's the method is tricky. It's hard. It's hard to detect what people are going to do next.
Okay. Well, just one quick follow-up question. I was wondering if you're at liberty to say, you said someone was being monitored on camera and still you guys caught them cheating. Are you able to say which method they were using without naming the person?
Yeah, there was an in-browser plugin.
Okay.
That allowed them to not have a secondary computer to check or other things that might easily register suspicious eyeball behavior. I mean, if Magnus is checking something or has something weird going on camera, we could see it, right?
Right.
But this person was not registering any suspicious behavior, yet the data was screaming to us, and we were like, WTF, right? We're like, what is... And that actually helped us improve our methods again, because it led us down this road of realizing there were more... So we do things that are really cool and can detect people without invading privacy, what's going on, what kind of plugins they have in Chrome and that kind of stuff. But there are always ways to get around things. And right. Before you know it, they'll detect a way to hide from the plugin detectors, you know. So, yeah.
Okay.
It's fun talking about it now
because
like it's kind of over. But honestly, this is like... This is the most painful part of my job, and Greg kind of had a front row seat to what goes on with this stuff, and
life.
It led to some stressful communications between all of us involved. When you know, but I can say happily, this will be the final thing I'll say on Fair Play. I can say 100% certainty that the Sweet 16, the final 24 teams, everybody was being monitored, and I am 100% confident that those who won all financial purse prizes available in the 2017 Pro Chess League did so fairly.
Okay.
I will say that.
Yeah. I mean, and this is just one chess fan speaking, but I hope that most people watching, I mean, you guys clearly are working hard to prevent this from happening in the future. I mean, you can't control the behavior of every player. So, if you're investing resources and time in this and trying to stay in front of the problem, I mean, hopefully people understand that it's for the better of chess. And, all you can do is make a really good faith effort, which it sounds like you are. So
you said it better than me. Maybe you should be our public relations speaker on this stuff.
I don't know. It sounds like you're it's keeping you a little too busy for my taste.
Yeah.
So, all right, let's move on. So first of all, when is the next season?
So we'll do the next season again. I think we're going to run with this January to April, you know, sort of the March Madness. You know, I think we like this time of year. So to start the new year, every year will be the Pro Chess League main season. Now there are some. I don't want to speak too much about what we're discussing behind the scenes. Greg, Eric, and I kind of have an annual. Let's get together and review the good, bad, and the ugly meeting tomorrow, and we have plans for. A slightly new format in terms of how the teams are initially placed and paired. I don't want to speak too much about that, but there may be qualifier events for other teams. So we have a lot of people asking to get in, but we maybe want to tighten the ship anyway, just to make it better from a content and experience, right? Because 48 teams is great, but maybe it's not really the best for the fans when it's so overwhelming and you can't give every team the love they deserve. So how do we do that? So we may find ways to kind of tighten the ship, add some qualifier events. Who knows? Maybe November and December every year will be these like, you know, think of it as like the Big Ten, right? The ACC championship, the Pac-12 event or something. Teams sort of vying to get the last spots in every division. And then the main season kicks off in January. We've got big dreams about it. Chess is an esport, man. We've arrived, and we've also got some negotiations going on with some other things, and Greg isn't involved in this, but Eric and I are dealing, hopefully, with some people really interested and believing in the power of chess online. And the one thing I can say in our favor, I wrote an article for American Chess Magazine. It's Josef Osik's new venture, the guy who does Chess Informant. Not sure if you've seen it, ACM.
It's come across my radar. I haven't had a chance to read it yet.
Yeah, and he just started it. I think it's kind of a mixture between Chess Life and New in Chess, right there in the middle.
Okay.
And anyway, but he asked me to write a column for him. You know, every quarterly or the same period as New in Chess, I think, every couple months magazine. And so my column coming out in American Chess Magazine this month is about why chess is the next esport. And one big thing that we have going for us is the one thing that held us back for years, Ben, which is no matter what you say, chess can't be as exciting as World of Warcraft or League of Legends or Hearthstone or any of the other crap that people play. I mean, those games are just, you know, they're really addicting. And but here's the one thing chess has going for it is all of those experiences are fantasies or simulations of reality at best. You know, simulations of reality if you're playing, you know, Gears of War or Call of Duty, walking around killing people. Hopefully that's not something you're actually doing. So this is, like, none of those are real life. Chess is the same game in all of its cognitively beneficial, critical thinking skills developing, whether any of that crap is true or not. Guess what? It's true from the perspective that chess is certainly a game that can be better for kids than any of those other games, right? Any of those other video games. And I joke, crap. I think it is all true. I was just saying that all that stuff is true. And so it's the same experience online as it is over the board. And that has a different, I think it brings in a much wider demographic of potential people that like it. So maybe it'll never be World of Warcraft, but I don't know that it has to be, because those games are already the best. And I think that we really are in a way that chess is being presented in its most entertaining fashion, more better than it ever has in the history of the game. People are buying in and watching it on Twitch and YouTube and these other, you know, big gaming communities. And I think it's arrived. I think we're going to have more and more interest in watching online big money chess events in the future.
Okay. Now, I know that this is probably sensitive because you're still in the discussion stage, but are you able to say with these inquiries that you and Eric have gotten, are they like venture capital type investment or advertising type investment?
Both.
Okay.
But the ones we're really looking for are, you know, the ones that might give us the motivation to potentially, I guess I'll say that they're esports companies, companies already in the genre, in the market, right?
That's awesome.
And
nice.
So the goal would be to land some sort of long-term mutually beneficial agreement to help grow chess as an esport. When, you know, one of the guys I was talking with said it best when he said, you know, we don't need another League of Legends because Rocket League and League of Legends, they're already king. Like, why create one that competes with that? Let's invest in something that is completely different, right?
Yeah.
So that's one way to look at it. So hopefully we'll have some good news with that in the coming year. So
yeah. And speaking of investing, obviously I can't let you on here without talking about what's been blowing up your Twitter feed the past week. You guys made an initial tryout for Shark Tank.
Yeah, it was the craziest thing, because I have to make a huge confession. I haven't watched much Shark Tank. I'm not a big Shark Tank guy, but Eric is. Eric, like, I think he's probably seen every episode twice, right? Like, he loves Shark Tank.
I think when they give you an MBA, they give you all the tapes and you just have to watch it. So
Eric. Right. No, it's like, so Eric, you know, Eric and Jay and apparently a lot of people, I mean, it's going in its ninth season. So I kind of felt like an ass to be like, oh, like, I was like asking Eric, like, how does it work? And at one point he turns to me, he's like, wait, have you ever watched the show? And I was right. I was like, I think I saw a kid pitch like a Play-Doh that didn't have like some sort of residue that people are allergic to years ago, but it was before Cuban was on the show.
Okay.
So anyway, yeah, we went and we waited along with, you know, 1,000 other people from 8 a.m. We didn't get seen till 6:30 p.m. And there were still like 300 people to go. I feel so bad for these producers.
That's funny. I feel bad for the waiters.
The producers saw so many people and the waiters. It was abusive for everybody. And,
right.
And honestly, I guess I feel less bad for the waiters because having waited in line, I feel like there were so many people there for their, you know, one chance to get on TV. And it just seemed like some of them were almost like this was a lifestyle for them. Like they go to shows and try to get on TV. Like
right.
One of the guys said that this is his third year trying to do it.
Right.
And so I was like, okay, well, so we were, you know, we were a little bit out of place in that. We've been doing this for a long time, and I think our company is, but to be clear, we're not advertising VC. We're not looking for investments into chess.com at all. I mean, chess.com is completely rolling forward. I mean, we have no debt. It's a profitable company. It's, you know, we don't really want to disrupt the core. I mean, the only thing that might happen at chess.com is if one of our majority shareholders, which is not me, unfortunately, one of the guys that owns a few more shares wanted to sell privately, but it's not an open door to invest. What we are wanting to do is launch Chess Kids. So if you saw that video, we're trying to maybe open up the opportunity to help grow Chess Kid. And then after the whole thing, we kind of started thinking maybe we should be pitching the Pro Chess League. So maybe we'll do that. I mean, it was fun in the end. We did our pitch, and we were given really good news. We're not supposed to talk too much about that, but we were given good news that we're moving on to the second round. But I want to tell everybody that doesn't mean we're going to be on TV. In fact, they made it very clear, even as the producer said, this is great. We're moving on. Look for some calls. You know, the next stage is apparently a lot more background checks. They actually assess that everything we're saying is true. And they, you know, they look for more about us, and they want to make sure you're TV worthy, and that you're actually not lying about your company. But assuming all that goes true, then you move on to the round. Okay, like now there's a real chance you're getting on TV. But they made really clear to say, look, shows, people have been cut on the studio floor before walking through the doors. So until you're actually on Shark Tank, you're not on Shark Tank.
Right. One thing I want to say is I found it, because you guys teased it a little bit before the audition online, and I assumed that you had like a hearing. You know, I didn't expect Mark Cuban to be in the room, but I didn't expect you guys to be waiting in line for 8 hours, because those of us who are chess fans know Chess Kid is a bit of a juggernaut. I mean, you know, I'm a chess teacher. I give it to my kids, and my kids love it. You know, Fun Master Mike is a global celebrity now. So,
right.
So I was surprised that you guys sort of had no special treatment, and that, like, and given that you're a profitable company on your own, that you guys like put in the sweat equity and just stood there and waited with people who probably basically have like a little plan drawn up on the back of a napkin.
Yeah, no, I made fun. I did a live Facebook thing, because apparently that's what we all have to start doing now. We have one more thing that we all have to freaking do. So I was doing this live Facebook thing and teasing that I was making Eric wait in line while I went and got coffee.
Right.
which was true. But I was teasing him because it was his fault. I think you're right. I think probably if we had just done a video and sent it in, we probably would have moved on to the next round, just given that assessment. But We didn't know what to expect. That's the honest truth. We went there thinking it was in Palm Springs one of the casinos there, and we didn't know how busy it would be. We were like, let's just show up. It was literally spur of the moment. It was Wednesday, and Eric was like, let's go do this. So I drove out to Palm Springs with the giant Peshka, which is our pawn, in the back of my car.
That's funny.
Met Eric at a Holiday Inn Express. Had an incredibly uncomfortable sleep, got up, and we went and did this. So you're right, though. Probably in hindsight, it was all a big waste of time.
Okay. Well, speaking of Eric, the CEO and founder of chess.com, I do feel like we should dial it back a little bit. I think that a lot of listeners will know your backstory and know the backstory of the company, but a few probably don't. So do you mind talking a little bit about how you latched on to chess.com and started to grow this company?
Yeah, I'll tell you the real version, which is reminds the kids to plug their ears. But I think when we first started, Eric and I didn't like each other. In fact, there's a direct quote where he remembers turning to Jay and say, "Why is Danny such an asshole?" and it was partly because I think I had a bit of an appreciation for what the potential was more than maybe some of my peers were, where all they were looking for was international grandmasters with decent personalities to do content. They just wanted me to kind of be settled in that role. And I was like, well, no, wait a second. I want a bigger piece of the pie. Right. So I was an asshole, to be frank. But it was funny. So we met at the 2007 Berkeley International, held by Arun Sharma. And I think David Pruis was still doing it, but see, neither David nor I worked for chess.com. Then they came, and had dinner with all of us players. Jesse was there. Jesse Cry was there. David was there. I was there. Vinay was there. So there were a bunch of us there.
And you're like 21, they're 22, right?
Sorry, say that again.
You're like 21 or 22 years old at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. And so they're interviewing all these guys, not really officially, but they're kind of talking to all of us and like, hey, we own chess.com and it's a domain name. And they had no idea what they were getting to with me. Cause the quick backstory on me was at 19, you know, when I was thinking I was going to be this super professional player, I went through some health issues and I wasn't able to travel and compete in the way that I wanted to. But what I was doing during that time, in addition to kind of teaching in the schools and making money with private lessons, was I took the entire Google AdWords and analytics courses, which is like this 3-hour course of videos you can take online. And back then it was like a big deal because it was like learning what made the internet tick. It was like people didn't know what SEO was, right? And there was no way to What was this magical thing that drove traffic to your site? And remember, there were actually times in our life where people said the phrases, what's YouTube?
Right.
And what's Facebook, right? I mean, so this was a time, and so I had done all this stuff, and I actually went and bought the premium domain name, chesscoaching.com, because during this whole thing, I learned, oh, I need chess.com if I'm going to be like the internet chess king. And chess.com had like just launched. So it was this weird like timing where they were ahead of me. So I bought chesscoaching.com for like $300, which was a steal. I later sold it to chess.com, like once I became kind of, you know, lucky enough to be a part of the whole team for much more than that. Because it was, you know, back then people also didn't understand that domains were like real estate, right?
Right.
So that was my background. So now they're talking to me at this event and I'm like, no, like I own chesscoaching.com and I want to be a big part of this. And they're like, okay, calm down, buddy. And I'm like, no. And so we went to these like long email negotiations where Eric and Jay, in the end, we essentially had to agree to disagree. They didn't want to, you know, bring me in to the level I wanted, but I also kind of wanted, you know, to do some more paid work online. I started doing, you know, and unfortunately, I think my stubbornness, you know, kind of backfired and probably prevented me from getting as much equity as I was eventually later able to get, but that's okay. And long story short, a year later, I was brought on full time, basically walked away from all the investment I was doing from my own website. Eric and Jay were they love chess. Eric is like an 1800 player. Jay's like an 1800 player. But I think that they would be totally honest and would admit that they're sort of a victims to their own success. I don't think they thought chess was going to grow in the way it did, because they also owned karate.com. They also owned exercise.com. So they were sort of premium domain, like, you know, sharks, right?
Right.
And Eric had gotten chess.com at a very serious discount that I don't even know if I'm allowed to disclose without him here. But it was a serious discount from, you know, a group of VCs in the Bay Area who essentially didn't know what they had. They had this chess mentor software, which the really old school guys of chess online will remember chess mentor as being the first thing that chess.com had. But all they were trying to do was peddle this chess mentor software with the domain chess.com, right? It's like Yasser Sarawan once said to me, it's like owning, you know, janefonda.com and all you're trying to sell is her autobiography. It was ridiculous. And so, you know, Eric fell into this domain name at a serious discount, him and Jay started building it, still with an eye all the time that they were basically going to walk away,
right, flip it,
and let chess.com go,
or
just kind of make some passive income. And they eventually the all of those things happened with karate and exercise. Those kind of became the failures, and chess blew up. And now we have, I'm looking at our Slack team here, and we have, you know, over 60 salary employees, and you know, a lot of people working on chess all the time. So
yeah, not to mention
pretty lucky, pretty fortunate.
All the pros that you help support. So was Eric an 1800 when he bought the domain, or was that just as a product of being invested in the site?
No, he was already. Eric learned to play chess at BYU from Jay. So Eric had no idea what he was doing with chess, and Jay is really the first. He should really get all the credit, because Jay's our CTO and other co-founder, and Jay taught Eric to play chess in their dorm, and Eric loved it, and Jay and Eric just dove into it. Jay, I think at the time, was like a 1600 player. See, Jay played with Vinay, and Jay has all these stories of being a Bay Area chess player.
Okay.
As someone who looked up to Vinay Bhatt and all these other guys in his generation. And so Jay taught Eric to play, and then Eric really was the businessman who Eric started his own scholastic enrichment program around the, you know, in Utah, in the BYU area. And I don't know if a lot of people either know this or not, but Eric was actually the original owner of WholesaleChess.com, and he was a big sponsor of the HB Global event, which all of us remember back in 2005 was Maurice Ashley's sort of first millionaire chess, right? Oh, Eric actually sponsored all the boards and the clocks for the HB Global event years ago.
Yeah,
as the owner of Wholesale Chess.
Does he still own Wholesale Chess?
No, he sold. So then what he did when he graduated BYU. He stopped teaching in the schools, did Wholesale Chess for a little bit longer. Then he sold it to a friend of his who now runs it. Matt is a great guy, and we love Wholesale Chess, so get your stuff from them.
I do, in fact. Yeah.
Oh, cool. So So Wholesale Chess, it was sold, and he used that money to go to Stanford and get his MBA.
Wow.
And while there, he was sort of, you know, lucky to have the entrepreneurial understanding of getting these domains when they became available. But he said himself that he always envisioned that he would kind of, you know, be a part of, like, Peter Thiel was teaching a class at Stanford at the time.
And, wow.
You know, so I think he thought he was going to take some Facebook shares and go join the monster that everybody else was. But chess.com kept growing. And it kept growing, and then they decided at a certain point that it was really where they needed to be, and they let go of Exercise, and you know, which, you know, they kind of sold out their shares, and it kept running on its own. And I know those guys too. It all kind of happened in around the same timeline, and they are full time in chess, and but yeah, so he to answer the question, he was already a chess player who had had a lot of experience that a lot of us have had, you know, teaching in the schools and doing all this stuff, and then just, you know, got into the web domain.
Nice. Well, that's like an inspirational tale coming from both of you guys. I mean, Eric to sort of pull himself up by his bootstraps and parlay it into this big company. And you, I mean, you're a high school dropout. I didn't know until totally. I watched the Shark Tank video.
I got my GED at... which is funny because I was winning college scholarships as a chess player since like what, like sixth grade. I won the elementary nationals. I think it was in Peoria. Then I won the junior high nationals when it was in my hometown, not hometown. I live in northern Arizona, but in Tucson, Arizona. And then I won high school, and each one of those, like I won a scholarship to UMBC when they were still doing chess. I won a scholarship to UTD. But I was always going to be a high school dropout. I think my destiny was clear because I started teaching at 15. And you know what happens when you start making that money? Wow. Like I just said, like I had no interest in going to higher. But I was the kid who was. Getting a D in science because I was up all night reading all the King's Men. Like, okay. I was always intellectually curious and I wanted to do what I wanted to do, but I never really enjoyed the formalized approach of education. So I got my GED and moved on.
When you said all the Kings, I thought it was going to be a chess book for sure, but
no, I could have said, well, Catch 22 or some book, right? I was reading and doing something that I wanted to do and not doing what I was supposed to do.
Right. And I guess you were working pretty hard on your chess at that point too, right?
Yeah, at that time I still was. I was still probably not as much as I should have been. I mean, honestly, I think drinking and partying as a teenager probably prevented me from becoming a grandmaster back when I, you know, still had the ability. But and maybe, you know, maybe someday they get back on the road. But I don't know. I think at this point, I'm afraid the GM ship might be sailing for me.
Well, I don't know. My perspective, obviously, I'm not like a huge authority, but it's more a question of is the commitment worth it? I mean,
right.
you're not out of the ballpark in terms of chess strength, that's for sure.
Right. No, and I've had a lot of, I mean, over the last 7 years doing chess.com, sometimes I get in a place where I'm like, all right, honey, I want to get a trainer. And she's always supportive, my wife. And she's like, okay. And like, so I've worked with, you know, Anishuk or like I get somebody, I'm working privately and they're always like, all right, after a few lessons, they're like, Danny, like, what are you doing here? Like, okay, you have the skill set, you have the strength to go become a GM, but let's be honest, you're an amateur.
Right.
You're not a professional. Like you can't play high level chess unless you play high level chess. If you're not playing chess, then don't pretend to be committed to improving chess, really.
Right.
And so at a certain point, which is good because they could have just kept, you know, taking my $100 an hour, you know. It's always nice to have that honest feedback.
Yeah, and you have four kids, it has to be said,
right,
in addition to your company. So you have a good excuse.
Yeah, good excuse.
So you
maybe one day I'll follow in Ben's footsteps and become the second 40-year-old GM.
I mean, he's, you know, it seems to have paid off for him. Obviously, he would be doing fine as a chess personality either way, but, you know, it would have been hard for him to be the grandmaster in residence without being a grandmaster.
That's true.
So you mentioned the health scare. This was a cancer scare, correct?
Well, it was a tumor. It wasn't cancer. It was a benign. I mean, I don't know how you did. It was a cancer. It was, you know, a cancer, but it was benign. It was a growth in my ears attributed to, I lost my hearing super quickly. I went from, you know, I actually, the problem started, the funny story is they started flying back from Lindsberg, Kansas for the whatever, what was that, the 2004, 2005 U.S. Junior Championship, or maybe it was 06, but anyway, flying back, and, like, my ears started having serious problems, and I had always had tinnitus as a kid, so that's, like, ringing in your ear, and it just never went away, but it was never anything to really bother me, but it was something I kind of dealt with, and at a certain point, we started seeing all these doctors and experts, and they're like, you have serious growth infections in your ears that you haven't been dealing with, and it took, like, all of a sudden losing my hearing for me to be like, oh, like, maybe I should have been talking about this tinnitus or this or that, and, So, five surgeries later, what I had was first they removed the growth in each ears, and then they did a stapedectomy, which is you have the stapes bone, which is your key bone that helps the sound kind of filter through your eardrum. A stapedectomy replaces, you know, the bone functionality there with, like, a plastic metal artificial bone. And then I had a Baha, which was one of the earliest cochlear implants. Now everyone hears about cochlear implants, a way to, like, help kids who are born deaf here, and they're, you know, the technology is advancing with these cochlear implants, but the Baha is a bone anchor hearing aid, so it was one of the initial versions. So I have a metal piece in my head. I actually have a card to prove it, if anyone wants to see, just in case I ever get buzzed at a metal detector at the airport.
Right.
So the metal piece in my head, combined with the artificial sort of plastic metal bone stapedectomy, allow me to hear. And I'm assigned, and that's partly, I always tell people that's partly why I'm so loud, because I hear in an omni way, like, you know, most people, you can zone in a bar and hear somebody talking and you're hearing them. And a lot of people don't know you have that superpower as a human being. But so what I hear is the sound reverberates off the metal piece in my skull. So I have a very difficult time hearing in really loud places, because I hear the sound in the whole room as much as I do the person talking to me.
Wow.
Huh. So that's just a little bit of a crazy, crazy background. I mean, I don't regret it, because, you know, I started dating my wife and started, you know, learning, Google Analytics and whatever. But it was a wild ride for a couple of years there.
Wow. Scary stuff. So you mentioned Google Analytics and the online course you took. What else have you done to educate yourself in the aspects of your job that are not strictly chess related?
Well, yeah, in the meantime, since actually working for chess.com, which, of course, I was originally just sort of the director of content and helping with our professional relationships, and now I'm the vice president of who answers email, I would say. I do a lot of I really like what I do now, because we kind of get to play the bigger chess game on the web. I mean, we're constantly educating ourselves on the proper processes of impression, retention, conversion. You know, when does your brand impress on somebody through the web, whether it's social networks or via the web, and how well are you retaining these customers after they've been impressed, and then how well do you potentially convert upon those who have retained into convincing them to want to get better at chess. I think chess is awesome, and it's phenomenal that, you know, we have so many people. I mean, the mass majority of chess.com is people who want to get access to the tools. It's not an ad revenue business in that way. And we have a lot of people who've said they want to get access to premium tools, and that's really awesome, and we've been really lucky. But, you know, there's a lot of, you know, PPC, pay-per-click, and, you know, what's your CPI, you know, your click per impression, and how you convert and retain. And there's a lot of really cool stuff we do. And on the web, you know, the web is really evolving to this. The future of the web may include the death of the website. You heard it here first, everybody. I mean, I think that if you're only offering content to people, you know, the Buzzworthies or the Huffington Post, and I hate to say that to them or whatever, but I mean, I think a lot of people see the writing on the wall. But these days, if you get a link in Facebook, just ask yourself, how often, if you're not retaining and experiencing that content right there in the app on your mobile phone or right there, how often do you actually click and go to a website? You know, the answer is less and less and less, right? Most people want to experience the joy of their, you know, not looking at their children and being on their phone right in the app. They don't want to actually click on anything. And that's the future of the web, is if you can't deliver something valuable to people in their native experience, then you're missing the boat. And so the only way you get around that is by offering an experience via your portal, your platform, your site, that can't be replicated, right? So like your tactics trainer, your premium tools, your videos that really belong to your company that people can't get anywhere else. So, you know, the future of the web, you really have to have value in everything you offer people. You can't just trick people with content and clicks anymore because it's everywhere. People are getting what they want for free where they want to get it, whether we like it or not. And that's okay. And I think so the way to evolve is to offer something really great and give people real value. And that's what we're trying to do. And a lot of my job is analyzing the market and how to do that, how to impress, retain, and convert, and, you know, analyzing our social networks. How good are we doing? How can we improve? And then I do lots and lots of emails. And when I'm lucky, I get to do commentary for the Pro Chess League or Chess TV. But I think most people just think I get to act like an asshole for a living, which I do. I do get to act like an asshole. And I get to say that on Ben's podcast. That's right. So awesome. Yes. But for the most part, you know, we're doing a lot more than just kind of, you know, random shows and whatever. And plus, we've got so many great personalities who are, I think, better than me to begin with. I mean, like Simon Williams and, yeah, you know, we have Anna Rudolph and other people doing stuff for us. And I think that more and more what I do is kind of in the background, but I'm not letting the Speed Chess Championship go right away. That's my baby. So I'm doing commentary for that.
Nice. So, I mean, that's really, there's a lot of directions I could go with that. It's pretty interesting. I mean, first of all, it's like, in a way, it's not dissimilar from chess, the way you're sort of trying to strategize and plan ahead and look at the overall landscape and navigate your way through it.
Right.
But I'm curious, so where do you learn all the jargon? Like,
well, it's just something I like to say. I went to college at chess.com, the school of chess.com. I mean, like, I started 23. I mean, we've been 23, 24. And I, before that was a, I think I had a decent head on my shoulders, but I was a high school dropout with a GED and I was a professional chess player coach, right? You know, so you learn this stuff by just diving into the field of it, you know, and, what's interesting is we're all pioneers in this. You know, Facebook and Google and I mean, the people in the government who try to even measure these guys, and I always joke that Facebook is evil because the moment you search for something on the web, the next time you log into Facebook, you're like, holy shit.
Yeah, it's
like,
bizarre.
How are they advertising me that? You know, I mean, I would argue that there's a lot of antitrust. We do not data mine. Just so you know, we respect full privacy of our members, and we have ads that are delivered to what we believe to be a gaming community. And certainly people that want to advertise to our users look at the demographic of chess.com and try to make a decision about whether it's worthwhile. But we are not data mining our users at all. I personally believe it's wrong, but whatever, Facebook, you keep doing it. Right. I don't think anybody even knows how to control or stop these guys anyway. I mean, the web is this, like, it's this machine that's sort of out of control. And it's just evolving, and you know, I've learned it just by being involved in it. And so we have to learn how to reach users and convince them that we're offering something really cool and unique, and that chess is great. And I think it is. But I think the future will be interesting. We're all pioneers. I don't even know that we do the best. I think we do a pretty good job, and I'm lucky to kind of be involved as like the leader of that area of things for us. But I mean, things change. Anytime Facebook changes their algorithm and decides, okay, your company no longer reaches people's pages because of this, and we're saying that's because we want to improve the quality of their feed, and we want to deliver content to our users that actually is appropriate to them. But guess what? If you pay a lot more, we'll deliver it to more people. I mean, if they change their algorithm, we're all slaves to how to actually reach people to convince them that we're offering something really cool. This is like my totally candid, I am not holding it. This is the truth of what it is. And the web is a scary entity because it's evolving very fast. And we're all, you know, we try to stay on the cutting edge so that we can do the best we can to grow chess. But it's an interesting thing. I don't know what the future holds in regards to that. Who knows? I mean, maybe, you know, maybe the future is that, you know, we all, you know, the chess.com doesn't make it. I don't know. I mean, it's hard to believe at this point, but I think it's always good to stay humble and, you know, have humility and not to pretend that you're above being outgrown by somebody else, because I think it's the truth. And I think that the web is an interesting and evolving enough entity that we all don't really understand where it's going. So hopefully we can just have fun in the process.
Okay. Just a few more questions, Danny. Obviously, I could keep you forever, but I know that you're a busy guy. So speaking of chess.com's growth, so how much of your like business plan is built on converting people to buying memberships? Like, How do you balance that with just overall vision of just things that would be nice to provide?
Well, I think it's always both. I mean, you want to have people loving your product enough that they're happy to get access to the cool tools that you built that are unique and that are different. Maybe other sites do similar things, but you try to do everything you can to do stuff that's better and cooler. So converting members to wanna get premium access to really interesting videos and features and puzzles, and that's always number one, because it's where our head goes on product development and how you decide to make a chess tool really cool. But I think that at a certain point, the nice thing about these, where that evolves, is even if it's sort of the ultimate goal is to have people using your site, clearly. The ultimate goal, I think, at a certain point is becoming more and more for us to just grow the chess culture. I mean, I don't mean to sound airy-fairy or right. pretend that, you know, some sort of pious approach. I mean, we're clearly a business and a profitable company, but I like to think that we're more authentic than any of our other competitors or anybody in this market when we say we are truly invested in the global growth of the game. And we just want, because chess is good for people, and because guess what? Every time Magnus Carlsen plays a world championship match, we get 8,000 new members a day from Norway. So even from a business level, we are more genuine when we say, like, let's grow chess. And we're willing, I think, to invest in not just the Pro Chess League and Speed Chess, but also other things that we do with Chess Kid and grow the chess culture because we experience the direct benefit of it. I mean, so it's not, that's why you can believe me and that it's not disingenuous. It's totally authentic when I say we're out for the good. Right. The good of chess, the global growth of the game, and doing things like that because we do benefit. And I personally believe in all the benefits of chess. So we're doing it. You know, we're super lucky because we get to do something that we actually believe in. And most people are clocking in, clocking out 9 to 5. You know how we know? Because they're playing on our site when they should be working in their cubicle.
Right.
Exactly. So, I mean, we're really lucky to have that kind of vision that is really something we can believe in. And yes, should have direct bottom line benefits for us. So where does that go? You know, do we eventually invest more and more chess to just grow in the movies or the culture? I don't know. I mean, I think that the future is exciting because I think as more people play chess, the good it is for people because chess is good for people. And then the better it is because we are the biggest ship on the sea. We are the biggest ship in the domain web. And so we're fortunate, and that allows us to be authentic in our investment for the game to grow.
Right. And or is there a scenario where you limit access to chess as an esport to members only, or
No, I mean, I don't think there's a good reason to do that, because I think that part of the reason why, like, you have to give people real value and for them to respect you and want to do it. And I think we give a ton of value for free. And then if they get the chess bug, there are opportunities for them to then pay a membership and get access to cool things that can help them get better. I think we would rather just, you know, I'm not trying to call anybody out, but I, this is where we don't agree with Aegon's approach, just on a philosophical business level. We don't believe that making enemies with those with the most interest to help you grow the game, basically all of us businesses. I believe that the officialdoms of chess, the FIDEs and the US Chess, those organizations need to do the best they can to position themselves to profit off of all of our growth. Let chess.com and ICC and chess24, let all of us battle it out and position yourself to profit off of the global growth of the game by whether that's, you know, revenue or shared opportunities in big events or affiliates. Because the moment you turn the profitable businesses into your enemies, one, you're going to lose because it's all we do and we don't have to answer to, like, boards and other things. It's just, and two, I think it's a bad idea because it made a lot of people upset, and you can't limit people's experience to something they've been getting for free forever. So we do not have any plans on limiting people's experience to the best players and the best access to the best players. We just, you know, whether that's, we believe we have the best access with our cool events, and we don't have any goals of doing that. Chess TV and Twitch and that stuff will remain free, and let's get more people playing chess to catch the chess bug. And then we hope that if we do our job on a product side, okay, like then they will love our company in the long run. But I think it's worth the investment.
Okay, good to hear. All right, Danny, I think this is my last question. You know, I, as you used to be, I'm a chess teacher, and in addition to the chess fans that listen to this podcast, I think we have a decent number of chess teachers. So what advice do you give to people looking to, like, with their boots on the ground, looking to get chess more popular in their local communities and get into more schools and stuff like that?
Am I allowed to say use chess kid? No, I'm just kidding.
Have to get in the door before we can sell them on chess kid.
I have some general philosophical advice, and this comes from a lot of experience doing both. What, you know, I've been there. I've been on the ground. I've done it. And now I have this sort of, you know, this perspective I have, you know, kind of removed from it and having, you know, a different perch now that I get to kind of look at the whole landscape. I would say, one, I think the infighting has to stop, and I think that chess coaches have to understand that their competition is not another chess program, but actually it's mad science, and it's soccer, piano, and it's math clubs, and not that any of those things are bad, but chess has not been accepted into, like, the general culture in the way that some of those other things have.
Amen.
And I think that the pool is not big enough to worry about it. So as we've grown Chess Kid, for example, I've had conversations with coaches and been like, well, aren't you just essentially trying to replace us with Chess Kid? And the answer is no. I mean, honestly, the long-term sustainability and growth of chess is based on relationships with coaches to teach. But why don't we have chess in every major university? God knows the NCAA has the frickin' money.
Right.
You know, it's because you haven't infiltrated the culture where it's seen as necessary. And I think that when you get a bunch of coaches, like, teaching in the universities, well, then they're getting salaries. Well, now the value of a coach position just went way up, whether it's a 2100 or a grandmaster. And I think that too much time is spent, you know, looking how to squeeze the liquid out of the stone rather than how they can offer chess in a way that grows something that makes it irreplaceable. And so, I think we have to continue to fight. So, yes, in a lot of ways, Chess Kit is fighting to get chess in the classroom and convince teachers who know nothing about chess that they can teach and play the game. And so, yes, in that way, that does sound like a competitor for chess coaches. We're trying to convince people who know nothing about chess that they can teach it. But that's because the growth, I mean, there are hundreds and hundreds of thousands of schools, and chess is not in nearly enough of them. And so guess what happens when a whole bunch of teachers start using Chess Kid? Well, at a certain point, now the school district across there, well, why do they have better chess schools than us? Holy crap. That's because they use Chess Kid and they have a coach. Well, we got to get ourselves a chess master. I think that the only way the value of the chess professional goes up is to stop thinking like a starving artist and actually try to grow the game on a cultural level. And maybe that's easier for me to say. I am lucky that we get to invest in that. We continue to do that. We do offer really big opportunities for school districts who don't have a chess culture in their history to start doing chess. And that is a big part of our goal. But I think it's the best way for chess to have a long-term future is that it should be taught in the classrooms by chess coaches, in communities where it's a staple part of things. So that's my overall opinion advice. So what are the X's and O's advice to that? X's and O's advice are just keep kicking ass, I guess. But I think when there come to be decisions about I think there are decisions sometimes about how to just get more chess in the schools. People should be willing to open up their thoughts about, getting more teachers involved in the schools who maybe don't know a lot about chess and not having sort of a nose in the air about, well, you have to have an actual chess coach to do this. Like, let's get chess in every school and being taught and let them using software, whether it's Chess Kit or something else, so that there's chess being done and then see where it goes from there.
Yeah. The broader the base of the pyramid, the more there is going up.
Right.
Well, Danny, thank you so much. That was awesome, and that was inspiring, that little pep talk at the end. And I happen to agree with you regarding basically a rising tide lifts all boats with regard to chess teachers. And, the more people playing, everything else will take care of itself.
Right.
Cool. Well, thanks. Danny, is there anything else you want to say before I let you get out of here and get back to your thousand other responsibilities?
The only other thing I'll do is I'll actually say that I think I'm going to do more podcasts. This was fun, and I think I've been talking to John Urschel. Some people know him as he's a lineman for the Baltimore Ravens and super interesting dude, John Urschel. You know, big. You know, he's got a PhD. He's on his way to getting a PhD from MIT in math, and he's a professional NFL player, and some other friends of mine. I think we're going to do more podcasts. So I'll give a plug of the fact that for those interested in that, maybe I'll let Ben know, or maybe when we actually get it going, we'll come back on the show or something, and we can kind of combine our podcast. Maybe I'll have you on my podcast.
Sounds good to me. And tell John Urschel he's to come on Perpetual Chess.
Oh, I will, actually. I think he'd love to come on the show. In fact, I'll intro you to John. I mean, if you want, I'll intro you to John right after this.
Awesome.
That'd be really cool. I think he'd love that.
That'd be good. I'm going to have to watch some Raven game tape, but
yeah, I always joke with him, like, I don't have any idea what position he plays, and I don't right. care.
Yeah. Yeah.
But cool. It's, you know, we're actually, I don't know if this is going to happen yet, but we're actually in the process of setting up a match between him and another high-level professional athlete. So I don't want to, we'll see what happens here, but we're working with the Players Tribune, which is this kind of famous sports site. I don't know if, I mean, we're like, yeah, a lot yeah. of the players, right?
Cheater so, site, yeah.
Yeah, so we'll see.
I have two guesses who that athlete might be. Am I allowed to guess?
Sure.
Okay, Manny Pacquiao?
Not Manny.
Or Le'Veon Bell, though.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, no, we're trying to do that one. We'll see. There are some others that are not as high profile as Le'Veon, but would probably do it too. So we'll see.
Awesome. All right. Well, thanks so much, Danny. This was a lot of fun, and I think people will find it really fascinating. And keep up the good work. I think people know how to track you down, whether you'll get a chance to read their emails, another question, but I think they can find you.
Find me on chess.com or whatever, on Twitter or something. I don't know. But Ben, this is a lot of fun. Thank you. This was great.
Thanks for listening to Perpetual Chess. To hear more episodes, give feedback, or suggest guests, go to perpetualchesspod.com. If you like the show, please help me out by telling your friends and giving me a high rating on iTunes. I'll be back next week with another episode of the Perpetual Chess Podcast. Sports Social Podcast Network.